Hate to interrupt, Richard, but he's talking about all his kids to Mrs. Hickel.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to call to order this meeting of the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs on behalf of my fellow co-chairman, Representative Foster, and welcome everyone here today. The time is 5:10. The records show that Representative Foster and Representative Willis, Representative Mulders from the committee are here, as well as Representative Bryce, Representative Davidson, as well as Senator Phillips. Today we have the pleasure of listening to Major General Hugh Cox, the commander of the Department of Military, or Commissioner of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and also the commander of the Alaska National Guard, discuss the new program that the Guard has begun, and he has several other people with him. But before I want to invite General Cox to speak, I'd like to recognize the First Lady of Alaska, Mrs. Ermalee Hickel. Thank you very much for joining us. Also attending today is my old friend Irv Martin, Director of Emergency Services, as well as Jeff Morrison, the legislative liaison for Military and Veterans Affairs, as well as Colonel John Fleming, who retired from the Guard recently, only to be brought back up and to be the newest person, or the person in charge of running the new Youth Corps program. So look forward to hearing from him today as well. And with that, I will turn the microphone over to General Cox. And before he begins, I got to tell you, we've known General Cox is a great advocate for the military and the legislature, and he's been a good friend to all of us. But this summer I got to know the general in a special way. He also carries a very good handicap, and he's a great guy to have on your golf team when you need somebody to hit the long ball. So, General, it's a pleasure to have you here today, and welcome to the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee.
Thank you. I might add that the team of legislators plus Cox won second place in the tournament. Mrs. Hickel, thank you for coming to hear what we have to say. Of course, if we really want to do this right, she could brief on the Military Youth Corps, because she has gone overboard to be the patron for the challenge program. She just got through with Colonel John Fleming and making a video that's going to be shown on RetNet soon, I think. You know, Marilyn? You know? That's talking about the Youth Corps, what it's all about, with the aim of educating the general public on what the program is. And what we would like to do today is to be able to answer any specific questions that you have. But in order to stimulate your thinking, we're gonna lead you down that path by probably in some cases telling you a little bit more than you need to know, but certainly giving you the concept and where we are and where we think we're going. John Fleming, who it was mentioned just retired from the Air National Guard, is the full-time director of the Challenge Program, which is aptly named because when you think about taking anywhere from 90 to 120 youth and taking care of them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 22 weeks, you can see what a challenge that really is going to be. And these youth are not necessarily the youth that you would expect to be able to handle with a great deal of ease. These are youth that have had problems, and so it's going to be quite a challenge. A little background on the program. This program was started at the national level, as it's funded from the national level, and was pilot programs were conducted in a few of the states with mixed amount of success. But the whole theory is to be able to take youth that are having problems and try to get them to be more productive from not only themselves but also for their communities. And the way to start with that is to be a high school graduate. I might add that when you look at the cost of this program in federal dollars and you break that down per student and compare it with the fact that 80% of the people that occupy our prisons are not high school graduates, and how much we pay to keep them in prison, which I think is something like $70,000 a year, what we pay for hopefully getting these students on the road to getting a degree or a GED and being maybe even going further with their education or training is something I think that the whole program is targeted. And that is to get these youth on the right track and do everything we can to help them. I actively have been working for the last year and a half with the Congressional Delegation and the National Guard Bureau and the Pentagon to try to get money for Alaska. And we were, Senator Stevens added the money in on the program for FY94 because we were very actively lobbying him to make sure that enough money was in there that they could expand the program from the original five states to what, 11 states, John, or 10 states?
We'll go to 16.
16 states. So he and Senator Inouye and the Appropriations Committee made sure that there were sufficient funds that Alaska could have a program, Hawaii could have a program, and some other states. And so we're very pleased that we've gotten that support from the national level. We will try not to go into too much detail yet. We are prepared to give you whatever detail that you desire to hear, and I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to John Fleming and let him get into some of the nuts and bolts of the program.
Down there?
You betcha. Have a seat and make yourself comfortable. Colonel.
Senators, representatives, it's my pleasure to be here this afternoon to talk about the Alaska National Guard Youth Corps Challenge Program. I've already had the pleasure of talking to a few of you one-on-one, Representative Willis, yourself, and talked to Senator Phillips on the phone, too, about the program, and you probably know most of this information. And what I thought I'd do is tell you a little bit about the background of the program, as General Cox started to do, and tell you where we are today in our efforts to pull this thing together. First of all, some people have asked, why the National Guard? Why has the National Guard taken on this chore or this endeavor to try to pull together a program for at-risk teenagers between the ages of 16 and 18? And I would say for three reasons. Number one is the National Guard is in over 4,000 communities nationwide, and we in the Guard have roots in those communities, so we as Guardsmen have a sincere and deep interest in the towns in which we are part of and the states of which we're residents. So we're concerned about the youth in America and the youth in our state and in our hometowns. Secondly, the National Guard is in the business to train. That's what we do best. We are instructors. We teach. We take young men and women who come to us from all walks of life and train them how to operate sophisticated pieces of military equipment, how to do medical chores, just about any endeavor you can think of. So we're in the business of training. And so it's a natural that we would try to train these young people. And thirdly, and probably most importantly, all military members, not just the Guard, but all military members take a solemn oath to defend and uphold the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And right now, I think we can all agree that we have two significant domestic enemies, and that's ignorance and indolence. And I think if we can make a dent in those two areas through this program, we'll have made a significant contribution to the health of this country and its youngsters. The Challenge Program is a outgrowth of a study that was put together by the Rockefeller Foundation in 1989. And the idea was to see if something could be done to help young high school dropouts by incorporating some structure and discipline into their lives and combining that with some community service volunteer projects. So those are two important thrusts of our program, and I'll talk a little bit more at length about those thrusts. As General Cox mentioned, there are 10 states that are doing this right now. Alaska will be the 11th state to join this select group. What's the criteria for a young person to come into the Youth Corps? Well, number one, they have to be between the ages of 16 and 18. Secondly, they have to be drug-free when they enter the program. It does not mean, though, that they cannot have experimented with drugs, and we already know that many of our candidates have done that. But they have to be drug-free in our program, and we certainly intend to keep them that way while we have control over them. Thirdly, they have to be free of any legal impediment, which again means they could have been on probation, they could have had problems with the law, but when we take them in, those have to be cleared because we can't afford to have these kids hauled away from us halfway through the program by the state troopers or whatever for a court appearance or what have you. So that has to be resolved. We can't take any convicted felons. and most of you would think that kids of that age probably wouldn't have a felony on their record, but we have had one applicant who was 18 that was a felon. We couldn't take him. They have to be dropouts from the public school system or whatever school system they were in. They have to be unemployed in a life-setting career, which is pretty easy to reach when you're a youngster that age. Most youngsters are not in a life career job at that point. They have to be physically and mentally able to put up with a rather rigorous lifestyle to which they will soon become accustomed. And lastly, they have to be volunteers, and this is probably the most key point of the program. They have to be there because they want to be there. When I was briefing the boys and girls from Anchorage last Friday, I made it a point to talk to them. They were there for an orientation session at the Air Guard Base. If they were there because their mom and dad pushed them there, or because someone else in their lives said, you really need to go to this program, then they really ought to think twice about coming to our doorstep, because we want them there because they want to be there and do something about their lives. It's going to start in Anchorage at Fort Richardson on Camp Carroll, which is the Army Guard's training site. And it's going to start next Sunday on the 30th of this month. And as General Cox mentioned, we'll have these youngsters for 22 weeks, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. They will be in a barracks-type living situation, but we've taken pains to make sure that it's as homey, I guess, as you could make a barracks. We carpeted the barracks. We've put insulation on the outside of the building because these buildings traditionally were quite cold in the wintertime. And they've just built brand new central bathrooms and latrines on each of these barracks buildings so that the kids will have some of the comforts that they might have been accustomed to, and maybe some of them won't have that back home. But in any case, we've done our best to try and make it as homey as we could. During the course of the program, the youngsters will be prepared for a GED test. That does not mean they're all going to take it, but it's an option. During the course of this, they'll learn such things as the typical high school curriculum of science and math and social studies, reading skills and writing skills. We have 6 certificated teachers on our staff, and we have 3 counselors on our staff to help deal with the needs of these youngsters. If a youngster wants to go after their high school diploma instead of that GED, that's an option. And we'll try to get them credits with their home high school, the one that they dropped out of, so that when they finish our 22 weeks, they can take those credits back to Homer High School or Ketchikan High School or whatever it is, and continue on in their high school career. In other words, go back to high school and finish their diploma requirements. We're going to work with them on some vocational awareness and actual vocational opportunities. So what I mean by that is we will bring in speakers from all walks of life to talk to them about a variety of vocations that are available here in the state, but we're also going to take them to the King Career Center, which is a showplace for career awareness training in the Anchorage School District. And during the afternoons, when there's no other students there from the Anchorage School District, just our youngsters, they will be exposed to one of 8 different disciplines. And we'll have actual Anchorage School District teachers staying behind to work with them, and our staff will be there too. And these youngsters in groups of about 12 to 15 per class will work on such things as carpentry, masonry, electronics, auto mechanics, small engine maintenance, computer science, masonry, greenhouse, and cosmetology. On weekends, and perhaps on an afternoon, on a Friday afternoon or a Monday afternoon, these youngsters will get involved in those community service projects that I mentioned earlier. We're going to match them up with groups like the Lions or the Elk Service Clubs, church groups, civic organizations that are looking for willing hands and healthy hands to help them with a variety of projects. So they might find themselves, for example, picking up a stretch of the Glen Highway on a weekend, or they might even find themselves painting the home of an elderly couple that can't do it for themselves. And again, working side by side with these community volunteers for 2 reasons. One, to get in the spirit of volunteerism, where they can get the good feelings that go with helping those that need help worse than they themselves need it. And secondly, to get the good positive vibes that comes from that. So when the First Church of Christ or when the Elks Club is honoring the volunteers, which they do after they finish a project, our boys and girls will be there with them to stand up, be recognized, get the pat on the back, get a certificate, get a plaque, be at a banquet or whatever it takes, so they get some good feelings from that. And of course, the goal is when these kids return to their hometowns, they'll be used to the volunteer programs and they'll be able to jump right in and do it back in their home communities. We're going to also teach them some healthy lifestyles, some life coping skills. They'll learn everything from how to make their beds and keep their room clean to some more sophisticated training like CPR, as an example. They're going to learn the evils, if they already don't know it, of smoking and drinking and drugs. What I would like to see is us to take some of these youngsters and put them out maybe just once in the course of our program with a community service patrol and have them go down 4th Avenue and pick up some people that are not too good condition and just see the where those poor people end up after an evening of drinking. I think that's probably a very good lesson that they'll learn on those types of projects. Two programs will be held every year. Our first one, as I mentioned, kicks off on the 30th of this month and graduates on the 30th of June. Second one will kick off on the 24th of July and finish just prior to Christmas, and then we'll repeat this cycle again in 1995. An important part of our program is the follow-up, because we're going to hook these youngsters up with a mentor from their hometowns who will stay with them for 12 to 18 months after they finish the residential portion of the program. The mentor's job, of course, is to make sure that the youngsters are staying focused on the goals that they set for themselves in the program, and if they decide to go to college, that they're in fact doing that. If they decide to go on for vocational training or get a job, that they're in fact doing that and hopefully succeeding. And secondly, to be there as a willing ear to listen to these kids and find out if they, or help them get through their problems, to give them a pat on the back when they need it and a kick at the other end when they need that, but to keep them focused on what it is that they've set for their own goals. Right now, we're sitting at about 91 or 92 students, and I gave you a handout that showed where these youngsters are coming from in the state of Alaska. We've got 25 different locations from around the state where we've been able to recruit youngsters from. Unfortunately, we've missed a few maybe key locations, but we're going to try harder next go around to get kids from those communities. If you're interested in the ethnic breakdown of those kids, I can certainly give that to you. We've got, for example, 14 male Alaska Natives and 8 female Alaska Natives signed up at the moment. And we've got 5 male Afro-Americans, 2 Asian Americans and 1 Hispanic student, and the rest are Caucasian. 16 girls in total. It's a co-ed program, and of course the girls will be residing in a separate barrack for the females. We have a staff of about 40 personnel hired right now, and the staff is a variety of ethnic backgrounds too. We tried to look for people that had those talents and capabilities so that the youngsters, wherever they come from, might find somebody to identify with. If they need that. A lot of these kids are going to bring some pretty severe emotional problems with them, and the reason I know that is some of the parents have told me that when I've talked to them. So we've got a professional counselor or two on staff to try and help these kids along if they need that kind of help. And I'll be happy to answer anybody's questions if you have any.
Representative Bryce.
Yes. You're going to have two camps a year, is that right? Okay. You would make mention that they were having preparation for the community. Will you actually administer the test, or do you provide the information on where to go?
We have applied to become a GED testing site.
Uh-huh.
And I've been told by the State Department of Education here in Juneau that that probably will come to us soon enough for our first class to be able to test on site.
Mm-hmm. Well, say a student wants to go through this program, they're successful, they receive the GED if they needed it. Is there any, I guess, follow-up to see if the person would want to get into the military, or is there any connection between, say, this program and joining the Guard permanently?
This is not
a step up. Or?
No, this is not designed as a recruiting program for the military or the National Guard. In fact, some of these kids, because of their experiences with drugs, would not be eligible for the Guard or the military. It's designed really to just help these at-risk youth, but we will expose them in the course of our vocational awareness to the Marines, the Army, the Air Force, and the Guard, and the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And if those are options that the kids want to pursue, they're certainly welcome to go for it. You mentioned something that I forgot to mention earlier that made me think of it. Success in the program is defined by getting that GED or going after that diploma or returning to high school.
Correct.
And getting through all 22 weeks.
Correct.
Any youngster that does that will be entitled to a $2,200 grant or stipend, which they can use for higher educational purposes, which would include going to college or going to vocational training that they would have to pay their way into. Or even if they're successful in lining up a job that requires, for example, special clothing or special tools, or even getting to the job site, that money could be used for that purpose. And we'll administer those funds from our program. We're not just going to hand them $2,200 when they finish.
You'll have fun.
Right.
One last question. What type of outreach has the National Guard done, I guess, as far as dealing with DFYS? Our various school districts around the state to publicize.
I have either included flyers like the one that you have in front of you in the annual conference that the elementary and high school principals had earlier, the superintendent's conference. I spoke at the BIA conference that was held in Anchorage a little while ago, and Governor Hickel announced this at the AFN conference earlier this fall, the program. I have personally been to places like Unalakleet, Barrow, Ketchikan, Kodiak, and talked to juvenile justice officers, high school officials, counselors, Native groups, Native elders, about the program. It's like selling motherhood and apple pie to the adults in most of these communities, or in Barrow, muktuk and whale oil. But whatever the case, it was easy sell to the adults, but it was very difficult sell to the children in a lot of these communities. But, you know, we've got 100, what I think, almost 100 solid volunteers, and these kids have been talked to by adults in their own community. They've been screened by their hometown to make sure that they're in this program for the right reason, not because they want a shopping trip to Anchorage or just come in to get some free clothing for a while and free square meals a day. So we think we've got some quality kids to help them.
What's your capacity, Colonel?
We could actually house about 130 students, but the National Guard Bureau has been toying with our budget lately, so I don't think we can afford to bring much more than 100 in. And we'll probably have just about that number for our first class.
Talking about funding, if I may, the concept of the program is that this will be federally funded, hopefully sustained through 3 years. The theory is that state, local government, or businesses, or municipalities will take up sponsorship of the program. And so there's more or less a commitment, as much as you can give a commitment for continuing funding, but if it works in Alaska, at one point in time, we would start to try to transition that into getting funds from the private sector as well as government sector. For instance, already the municipality of Anchorage donated $10,000 to this program. We didn't even ask for it, basically. $20,000.
How much?
And that was very useful to us because we haven't gotten any money yet.
Yeah.
Yet we've been spending it like we've had it, and that at least helped us do some things that we couldn't have done otherwise.
How much per student per camp?
The average cost right now for our program is just over $14,000 per student, but as General Cox mentioned, it can cost up to $70,000 in this state to incarcerate someone for a year.
Yeah, exactly.
And our objective, of course, is to have these kids go back home and be volunteers, be good, responsible citizens in their community, be taxpayers instead of tax abusers.
Exactly.
Senator Phillips.
Now, what's a typical day, though, look like?
Well, first of all, the kids are going to be in uniform. I haven't mentioned that. So we're going to put them in a military-style uniform. It won't look like the one that the general has on, but it'll be...
it'll work a little hard for that.
They're going to learn how to care for that uniform, and they're going to learn how to march. They'll be up at 6. they'll have a few minutes to get their quarters squared away, their bed made, and they'll march off to breakfast. We'll have a flag-raising ceremony every morning that they will attend. And then they'll go to breakfast, have a limited time to eat those delicious military-style meals that some of you are familiar with.
Yeah.
And then they'll march off to class. They'll spend the morning and part of the early afternoon in one of six different classrooms, moving from class to class, going through a variety of academic preparation. Lunch is included in there, and then we'll put them on a bus 3 days a week and take them to the Career Center. They'll spend a couple hours there in one of these vocational training programs and come back in the early afternoon or late afternoon, I guess it would be, and early evening. They'll do some athletics, some physical training exercises, have a little time for some independent study where they can work independently with their team leaders, we call them in the military. They might call them DIs or TIs. And those men and women will work with these kids to help bring them up to speed if they need some additional help on certain areas. And then in the evening, they'll have maybe an hour to an hour and a half of free time to write a letter, make a phone call if they've earned that privilege, and watch a little video or play a card game or just relax. And then they'll go back to their quarters, make sure they're, try to settle them down for the evening, and then get into bed by about 10 o'clock. Another interesting thing is that many of these kids in their applications, in their screening applications, where they sat down in front of people from their hometown, admitted to being seriously hooked on smoking. And of course, smoking won't be part of our tolerated regimen because it's not a healthy lifestyle. In fact, we're insisting that our staff and faculty give it up while they're on Fort Richardson too, so they won't be the only ones pinging off the walls. But the first couple weeks are going to be really tough, we know, on these youngsters as they try to break themselves of this smoking.
And smoking, I would assume, means chewing tobacco.
That too.
Is there any way they can quit?
Volunteer in and volunteer out. But any youngster that decides they want to leave will have to first talk to their assistant team leader, and then their team leader, and then a counselor, and then to me. By that time, we hope they've decided they better stick around for another week. But we're going to try to convince them they're making a mistake. First of all, they won't get the $2,200 at the end of the program. That may be a carrot that'll keep them in there. Secondly, we're going to remind them why they signed up in the first place and to get that high school equivalency or that go back to high school and get that education. And one other thing is we're going to be giving them $15 a week of spending money to help teach them some money management skills. One of the banks, NBA, I believe it is, has agreed to set up free checking accounts for the youngsters so they can learn how to balance a bank book, write a check. And we'll take them on little shopping trips occasionally to Fred Meyer's or someplace where they can purchase incidentals that they need for themselves, toothpaste or snack items and things like that. And we hope that those kind of carrots and those good things that come from the program will keep them there and not want to just bail out because it gets a little bit tough.
Senator Lehman.
I didn't get here in time before you talked about the faculty.
The staff is about 40 folks, and one requirement when we advertise the job, and by the since all this money is funneled into the state from the feds, it's 100% federally funded, but it comes directly to the state of Alaska, all of our staff are what we call temporary state employees. But one requirement we insisted, because General Cox asked that we insist on this, is that every employee be in a uniform. We want to make this as close to the military as we could and drive that theme home to these youngsters, that they're on a military installation, they're being taught by people that have some affiliation with the military. So we've got 19 members who are members of the Alaska Army National Guard. We've got 7 members who are Air Guard members. We have 1 member of the Navy Reserve. We're currently actively recruiting for a member of the Marine Reserve. We have several former Marines and those Army Guard members. We have 6 retired military, myself included. And we have 7 members, I guess, of the Alaska State Defense Force. And those are people that came to us with the correct civilian background to do the teaching or counseling or whatever we've hired them for, but they had no military experience. So what we've done is to actually bring them into the Alaska State Defense Force, where they are learning how to salute and march and wear a uniform and have become part of that viable part of the department.
Programs like Junior Achievement have been very successful in tapping volunteers in the business community, and that's one of the issues. Thought about that. It sounds to me like you have pretty good faculty without reaching farther than that, but maybe for some specific specialties if you need to bring in people. I would think the community would rise up and
One thing that I've been concerned about is homesickness issues from kids that come from outside the Anchorage borders. And they won't really have a lot of contact with their families other than by letter or by phone, even the ones in town. But on Sunday, after we get rolling, maybe 3 or 4 weeks down the road, we will allow parents or family members to come visit the kids for a few hours on a Sunday. And halfway through the course, they can actually leave campus, if you will, and go with their families. So what we've asked for is volunteers to step forward from the community who would like to be a host family to these youngsters that come from outside of our borders, our city borders, and we've had people step forward and say they'd be more than happy to do that. Of course, we'll do a little screening on them to make sure that they can offer what we want them to offer. And in a lot of cases, there are families from these villages and towns that these kids are coming from that are living in Anchorage already, and we're hoping to identify people that maybe know families or things like that from their hometowns. Plus, we've asked for help from the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce and business and industry like ARCO to find people that will come in and be volunteers, that will be mentors, that will be host families. And we've had a lot of people step forward and say, hey, I'm good in this particular career. That's what I do for a livelihood. If you want me to come in and spend some time with a group of your kids in talking about whatever my profession is, please call me. And we're building a list of resources like that.
The record should also reflect that Senator Lehman and Representative Cott joined us during the discussion. Are there any further questions for Colonel Fleming? I want to also take this opportunity. During this past interim, General Cox made available to members of the legislature the opportunity to go on a tour throughout the state to witness firsthand many of the bases and the posts, the National Guard posts throughout the state. And it was a great learning experience for many of us who went on it, as it provided us the opportunity to see firsthand what the Guard provides in rural Alaska, which is very different than the mission that it necessarily provides in the urban areas of the state. And in that sense, or that vein, the Guard provides structure and discipline for many lives which lack that. And likewise, I commend Colonel Fleming and General Cox for another program which does that again. It's providing structure and discipline to some young lives that need that and previously haven't gotten it. So with that, thank you for coming here today, Colonel. And we're going to take a brief second while the teleconference administrator here dials in.
Good luck.
Somewhere out west. Yeah. And we're going to be discussing King Salmon as the next.
Is that this would be a listen only on my part?
Yes. Yes, it is. Okay. And Mr. Anderson, you're joined here today by the members of the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, along with Senator Phillips and Senator Lehman. And before I forget, there's one special guest we have here in the audience, which I neglected to introduce earlier, but certainly which is a very, very welcome member to our committee today, and that is the General's wife, Pat. Thank you very much for coming today.
Thank you.
General Cox, I'll allow you the opportunity to introduce the topic, and also, I believe it's Mr. Einstead, or is it Colonel Einstead?
Major Keith Einstead is our project officer that's been a single point of contact for the National Guard throughout the short life of this program. I know there's varying amounts of knowledge about this, because I just heard Senator Phillips asking about King Salmon, but I'm fairly certain that all of you were aware of the fact that it was announced a couple of months back that the Alaska Air National Guard would take over the operation of King Salmon Air Base for the 11th Air Force. 11th Air Force, as long as I've known about King Salmon, has operated an air defense alert facility there approximately 300 people. There's a large radar site there that both the FAA and the Air Force uses, which will continue to be there. The program was developed as a result of the downsizing in the military and the desire to not close bases, but those bases that still had utility around the United States that might have to be used at some point in time would have the ability to be brought up to an operational status in short order. If you want to think about it as a standby base, that's a good analogy. In other words, a base that has facilities, it's warm, it has the ability to receive aircraft during certain hours of the day that might divert from either Eielson or Elmendorf because of bad weather or an emergency, and that if an air defense threat should occur to the United States and Alaska, that base could be brought up in very short order to full operational status as it is today. So that at some point in time, the aircraft that are out there, which are 11th Air Force aircraft from Elmendorf, they are brought back to stand air defense alert at Elmendorf. If the need be, then they can put those airplanes back out to King Salmon and with the requisite people to be able to maintain those aircraft and fly those aircraft. So our concept, the concept that prevails here is that the Alaska Air National Guard will operate that standby base to be available for the purposes that I just described to you for the 11th Air Force to use or other Air Force forces from outside the state or other Air National Guard or Army National Guard within state or outside of the state to come up there and utilize for exercise purposes. So we will be taking over and maintaining in a caretaker standby status all of the facilities there with the exception of the radar, which is already a contractor operation with Martin Marietta Corporation. And we will maintain a fire protection capability. We will maintain dining facilities for those people that work at the station. We will maintain billeting facilities for those that would live out there. I'm not talking about families. I'm talking about single individuals as we have now, as is the case now that would actually live on that station. Perhaps they have families in Anchorage or someplace else, but they're out there to work all the time. The present situation is they have 14... civilian employees that live either at King Salmon Air Base or in the local community. These are federal government employees that will be given preference on hiring to perform like functions for the state and for the National Guard. And we can get into some of the ways that we're going to try to preferentially hire people from the local area, and I know Mr. Anderson is interested in that. If you like, we can go into a little bit of detail on it, although we're still at the point where we're trying to figure out some of the nuances of how we do that. But we will have three uniformed Air Guard personnel, which will be the supervisory personnel there, and the remaining 40 or so, and I say 40 or so because we haven't quite gotten down to the finite numbers, of a combination of state employees and contractor employees. This is 100% federally funded. The money comes over from 11th Air Force at Elmendorf. It comes to the state, in effect, and we execute, as we do in other programs, federal money through the state system. And, of course, the personnel system will be supporting those state employees. But it's 100%. There's no fiscal note impact as far as the state is concerned. The Local 71 is going to be working very closely with us on the hiring part of it to maximize the opportunity to hire those people that are there, as well as give hiring preference to people from the King Salmon and Naknek area. And one of the things that we are discussing, Mr. Anderson, is getting a publicity and a small team of people that would come out to the King Salmon Naknek area that would be available, and it would be advertised at a meeting place agreeable to all, where they would explain to the people in the local area the process that has to be gone through for local people to make application to be hired for these positions. And we hope to have that worked out in the very near future, and we'll be working with with the Village Corporation and the local folks down there to set up such a meeting. But we have all along wanted to maximize the ability to hire local people, and when we exhaust all those possibilities, we will go outside of the local area and we'll go statewide. The contracting portion of it, we don't know what split that will be, but we want to contract as much as we can out. On the maintenance of the facilities, which is we're piggybacking already on already existing capability that exists within the state to maintain those facilities. Because I've not been able to get adequate funding from the state to maintain armories, I've got people on board that have more work capacity available if they had a place to do it. And so they will take over the function, in some cases, of performing maintenance on those facilities that are out there. So we're able to take advantage of workforce that's already on board and have money that will be able to be used to maintain those facilities. I think with that as an overview, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions along with Major Oystead on what our concept is and where we are at this point in time. A couple of other quick things on it. We are still in the stages of working this out with 11th Air Force. We anticipate that we would begin operation down there effective on the 1st of October of this year. And at that point in time, basically the active Air Force people would be gone, and it's the Air National Guard's chore to maintain that base to be open 5 days a week during the flying area, the flying period that exists both at Eielson and Elmendorf, so that if weather shuts down Elmendorf and say Anchorage International or Eielson, they've got some place to go where they can land those high-performance aircraft with a barrier. There's an arresting barrier to do take care of those fighter aircraft, and to be able to take those aircraft, refuel them, in some cases if they've got missiles on them, to disarm them, and send them back on their way when the weather's better at Elmendorf or Eielson. So that's the chore we have, as well as maintaining the infrastructure of the base. We have to be able to take fighter aircraft and turn them around and send them back to wherever they need to go. So with that, I would be happy to entertain any questions that you might have.
Senator Lehman.
I have one on the maintenance, General Cox. If you have excess capacity at King Salmon, could you use some of that, for example? I don't know. When we were there, you know, some folks said, you know, don't forget we need some maintenance help. Is that something that we have the flexibility to shift, or do they need to be staying there in a ready alert status?
The concept is that we will build a workforce that is justified by what has to be done at King Salmon, and taking into consideration the excess capability that exists with the workforce that we have in Anchorage that we would send out to King Salmon to maintain those facilities. We have state maintenance personnel that we send to all of the armories around the state on a periodic basis for periodic maintenance and installation of equipment, and that's on a scheduled basis. So the answer to your question is certainly, if need be, we could use those people to go to these other locations. But having said that, the bulk of the periodic maintenance on the facilities will be performed by these maintenance technicians that we already have in Anchorage. The people that will be out there will be at King Salmon will be there primarily to respond to emergency needs. The pipe breaks, the heating system goes down. But these people are not, they don't just do windows or don't do floors. They do windows and floors and ceilings and everything else. They're going to be triple, and we've worked this out with the union, they're going to be doing more than just being an electrician or more than just being a fireman. They may be shoveling snow and these other things. So we're taking advantage of being able to do a number of functions with each of these employees.
General, are there any environmental concerns out of King Salmon?
Well, there certainly were on yes. There are, as Mr. Anderson well knows, some horrendous problems in the barrel bluffs out there, as well as all over the state of Alaska. The concept that we are operating on is that the state, and that reads the Air National Guard, the Alaska Air National Guard, or the Alaska National Guard, does not have responsibility for this. We are operating the facilities. We don't own the property. We don't own the buildings. We don't own the equipment. We operate it for 11th Air Force.
11th Air Force continues to be responsible for the environmental cleanup, and they have a contractor on site, as a matter of fact, most of the year down there working on the barrel problem. And so the state has no liability at all in that respect.
Well, I want to commend you for working with the unions and also the native corporations out there for trying to promote the local hire as much as you're allowed to within the parameters of the law. I think it's also important to note here, I just made a note for myself, it's going to be 50 new positions, all of which are funded by the federal government for the Alaska National Guard. So this is a good boost for our economy in that sense. Unfortunately, while it's 50 new positions for Alaska National Guard, we're losing the net result is 250 fewer positions from the Air Force.